Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. The Jeff Blair Show just got 100% more brunt. This is The Jeff Blair Show with Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt on Toronto Sports Radio. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show. I think we need to talk a little baseball. It's colder than the Hobbs of hell out there right now, so why not talk about baseball?
People lining up down at the Rogers Center to get their tickets.
I heard that, yeah.
Shivering down there. People without computers.
Well.
God love them.
No, there are a lot of people that would rather, you know, there are a lot of people who still don't use bank machines.
Can't be that mad.
Tell you what. I was out in Morden.
Maybe in Morden.
A lot of my mother's her cohort, the rest of the 90-year-olds,
keep the money in the mattress.
No, they don't keep the money in the mattress. They're a little more advanced than that. It's not Winkler, for God's sake. They're a little more advanced than the folks in Winkler. Folks in Winkler would keep the money in the mattress. You do have to remember, though, that some of the people out there. This is a true story, by the way. We'll get to Morosi in a minute. He might even like this. But when the last Quebec referendum was held, there were people out there who were taking money out of the Bank of Montreal and putting it in the Royal Bank. No, I swear to God, that's true. That's true. Because of the fear that if Quebec separated, the Bank of Montreal was going to go with them. That is why it's, don't laugh, that is why it's BMO now. So there you go. That's a little rural Manitoba history for you. I wish I could remember. There's a guy who used to reach out to me on Twitter all the time. Anytime I said anything stupid or anything like that, the guy would say, that's a product of your dark rural Manitoba upbringing. And then he'd have the hashtag Dauphin, which anybody who knows rural Manitoba knows that Morden is nowhere near Dauphin. And certainly folks in Morden would never want to be, you know, mistaken for someone from Dauphin. You can talk to Millard about that sometime. He was a very good goaltender for the Dauphin Kings. Do we have Morosi yet? Okay, John, it's Jeff Blair here, Stephen Brunt as well. I know you want to talk about it, so I'm going to give you 35 seconds to say something about the Red Wings, and we're talking about baseball.
Go ahead.
Well, the Red Wings, I would say this, gentlemen. I'm feeling very, very confident the postseason appearance streak will continue, thanks, of course, to Mr. Larkin. So the youth movement, gentlemen, sustaining the Wings in their longest in North American postseason history streak of consecutive appearances.
The Canadian teams are doing their bit by getting out of the way, but that's our little gesture. But you know, watch out for those Habs now.
Can we adopt Detroit as a Canadian team?
Well, sure, because of course, as you well know, Detroit is north of Windsor a little bit by a couple incremental degrees. That is how the border, I believe, or the river skews at that point in time. It's actually north. So. Again, I was born in Marquette, Michigan, which might as well be rural Manitoba. So as far as
hold on a minute,
guys, we're all part of the same family. I'm speaking now to two of my dearest cousins right now on the air.
Hold on a minute. How big is Marquette?
I believe 40,000, maybe larger than that actually. Now, when you factor in, of course,
John, that would be the
university is there.
That would be the second largest city in Manitoba. Maybe third. Maybe I'm shortchanging Brandon.
I think in spirit, though, you are correct.
Yes.
That the Minnesotas and the Northern Michigans and the North Dakotas are blood brothers. I agree with that. Or at least Blair's, anyway.
What?
I'm not sure I necessarily identify with those folks.
No. Travis McKenzie, by the way, my normally excellent producer, tells me that the population of Marquette is now 21,000.
21,000? See, I thought it was larger than that because if you factored in the... now, I will say that there used to be a large Air Force base up there that is now closed.
There you go.
That might explain the reduction in population size. Right.
Same thing that happened in Langdon, North Dakota. Big Air Force. Anyhow, we need to move on. Sorry,
yes.
but you have an article up on Fox Sports. Welcome back, baseball. 10 biggest storylines as we await spring training. And boy, are we ever awaiting spring training here, especially this weekend. I mean, I want to go through these because Brunt made the point off air. You know, you kind of get wrapped up in the offseason of what the Blue Jays are doing and all this and all that. And then you take a look, you go, God, there's a lot of real interesting storylines. Starting with the Cubs winning the World Series. Now, I lived long enough to see the Red Sox win the World Series, so I truly believe anything's possible. But, John, I will guarantee you that the Cubs will not win the World Series this year because they're the Cubs.
Well, a couple things, Jeff. I think certainly there was that very same belief, that same thinking, as it related to the Red Sox until 2004. So things do change from a standpoint of whether a particular franchise is cursed or not. I do think the Cubs, the pain of their fans, I think far surpassed that of Red Sox fans over that stretch where they were both not winning because, of course, the Red Sox at least made it to the World Series and seemed to lose in less excruciating fashion a great many of those times. But listen, the Cubs, Theo Epstein, his group, guys, they have made the type of moves that you make when you think you are going to win the World Series. They bring in Jason Hayward. They bring in Ben Zobrist, who, of course, just won the World Series with the Royals. They bring in John Lackey to fortify their rotation. I do think they might want to add one more starting pitcher between now and August 1st, which, of course, is the trade deadline this year because of the fact that July 31st falls on a Sunday. But, guys, I really do think you look at that division, and yes, it's competitive. The Cardinals are very good. The Pirates are very good as well. But I just think with Joe Maddon, with where they have those players right now, they're in that sweet spot of now having had some postseason experience last year, but a lot of guys that are still young, what I would call young veterans, like Rizzo, now Schwarber's got some experience, Addison Russell, Bryant, of course. I just love the mix on this team. Maybe some questions about the bullpen guys, but I really think 1 through 25, the Cubs are the most balanced team in the National League.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. Like the little taste of the postseason is important that you mentioned. And they didn't look ready for the postseason last year, mm-hmm. but that just that little bit of experience for some of their young guys, that usually is kind of a precursor for teams. The Royals went a lot farther, obviously, when they got back to the postseason for the first time in a million years. But I think teams kind of have to go through that before they win, generally.
Sure. And I think, too, when you look at it, the Cubs now, Stephen, the one thing I'll say about them, actually two things. Number one, they won 97 games this past year. So there's this belief out there that, oh, my goodness, they won 97 games, and that was without starting the season with Bryant and with all these young guys still breaking in, and they weren't really expected to be this good. So, oh, my gosh, if they win 97 games in 2015, they're going to definitely win more than that in 2016. Well, it's not that easy. And one thing they did have was they had an historically great season by Jake Arrieta, and John Lester made every start. Mm-hmm. So when you look at that and you think about, okay, maybe the bill comes due on those innings some point in time in 2016 and they're not going to be quite as effective. So a lot of things did go right for the Cubs in 2015 that are not guaranteed to go right for them this year. So they do have to guard against a little bit of that, oh my goodness, everything went great and now we're going to be even better. Well, I'm not so sure that's going to be the case. The other thing is, of course, now they're supposed to win. And last year, Joe Maddon's first season, there was that freshness, especially in the first half, that they were playing what everybody thought was well above their skis. And it is hard, guys. And you saw it with the Cubs back in 2004 after they nearly won the National League pennant in 2003. Then they signed Greg Maddux. They signed Troy Hawkins. They're supposed to win the World Series that year, and it didn't happen. So I think for them, they now have to guard against that very difficult thing. It's hard enough to win in Chicago for the Cubs. It's even harder when you're supposed to win. And now, guys, they are definitely supposed to win on the north side this year.
What's the over-under on bean brawls when the Cubs and Cardinals play this year with Hayward and Lackey now with the
The,
I mean, that's going to be vicious. That division's already that's already the toughest division in baseball, the nastiest division in baseball,
yes,
by a country mile. But this is going to take it up to another degree, isn't it?
You're right. And of course, the Pirates, as we talked about a lot the last couple of years, that they have been the leaders in hit batsmen for and against. So
yes,
the Pirates have been in the middle of a lot of those things in recent years, including some with the Cardinals and with the Cubs. But now, as you say, and I'm a firm believer, I love the Cubs-Cardinals rivalry. I think in many respects, it's maybe the best one we have. I mean, mm-hmm. I love Dodgers Giants as well. I love Red Sox Yankees. I still maintain Red Sox Yankees is not the same as it was 10 years ago and
agreed.
Probably never will be again because the Red Sox winning changed it.
Yep.
But now here we have the Cubs Cardinals. They just played in the playoffs for the first time ever, and now the Cubs are supposed to win. They took away two free agents from the Cardinals with Hayward, disparaging somewhat the state of the Cardinals roster, saying they're getting older. So I love it. I think that, to me, is going to be one of the dominant storylines of the whole season is now the clear establishment. This is the best rivalry in the game with a decent amount of, you know, it's Midwestern mean-spiritedness, but it's certainly there. And so I think it's going to be a really good thing for the game. Rivalries are great for the sport. I think baseball maybe has suffered a bit from not having quite as many as other sports do. But Cubs-Cardinals right now, I think, has a chance to be the one that really defines the 2016 season.
You know, the Arizona Diamondbacks, I think when we went into the offseason, a lot of people thought, well, the Diamondbacks are positioned to do some interesting stuff. I don't think we expected that they'd take Zach Greinke from the Dodgers. And the move that, I mean, that's a move that may have altered, the one move this year that altered an entire division. David Price going to the Red Sox, yeah, that's going to be big. But I think most people look at the Jays and think they've got some offense. Okay, they might be able to make up for that. But my God, Zach Greinke going to the Diamondbacks from the Dodgers. I mean, the Dodgers don't have the offense to make up for that. That to me, that almost that one move altered that division completely.
Well, it did. And Dave Stewart, of course, won a World Series with the Jays, and we know how competitive he is. And he's taken that into the role that he has now as the Diamondbacks GM. And I think he saw the landscape. He probably gave up too much. To get Shelby Miller, at least according to what the prospect analyst would tell you, that he surrendered too much to get Shelby Miller. But I would draw maybe a little parallel to what the Royals did. When the Royals made the James Shields trade, they were criticized roundly for giving up Will Myers in that trade. But I think getting James Shields and, of course, Wade Davis set the stage for them to win the World Series. So I think that sometimes we get maybe into the business of over-evaluating prospects now. But I think the Diamondbacks certainly are not one of those teams. They traded for Miller. They traded for Segura. They signed Greinke. The Dodgers, I think, Jeff, you know, they had a pretty strong rotation advantage last year over both the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers. That's now gone away. Okay, Greinke to the Diamondbacks. The Giants signed Samardzija and Cueto. So right now, I think, you know, listen, the Dodgers still have arguably the best pitcher in the game in Clayton Kershaw. Their rotation is balanced, but it doesn't really awe you, mm-hmm. I think, well, when you go into a three-game series in quite the same way, unless, of course, Kershaw is pitching one of the three. So I think the Dodgers now have come back to the pack a little bit. The Dodgers also, Jeff, have not really ever addressed, still, yes, they traded Matt Kemp a year ago, but they still have a tremendous outfield surplus with a lot of guys who think they should be playing every day, with Yasiel Puig still needing to figure out exactly what it takes to be a consistent player in this league, with a first-year manager who's never managed before.
Mm.
So this, with the Dodgers, guys, is a chance to be a real complicated mix, whereas the Diamondbacks now, yes, they haven't really won with this group before, but they've got a guy in Paul Goldschmidt who can certainly be an MVP, and now they've got Greinke and Miller to go along with Patrick Corbin, so I like a lot of what the D-backs have done, and I agree it's going to be a very good, I think a very compelling three-team race there in the National League West.
Let's, JP, talk about the Yankees, because you always have to talk about the Yankees.
Sure.
Off the good back end of the bullpen, but they had that last year. They don't throw money around the way they once did. Old core of position players and a rotation, which is, I'm not sure right now what it is, but it wasn't good enough at the end last year. What are they going into the 2016 season?
Great question, Stephen. And there's been some interesting things written. I think Jeff Passan wrote about how the fact the Yankees haven't signed a major league free agent this entire winter. Think about this. The only team in the game that has not signed a major league free agent is the New York Yankees. Who would have thought this in baseball's economy? $2.5 billion shelled out to free agents this wintertime and zero by the Yankees, at least on major league players, which is really fascinating. So, but Jeff's point, and I think it's a good one, is this team basically waiting? Are they trying to freeze the puck, if you will, for a period of time until they get some of the more expensive players off the books and they can sign Bryce Harper when he becomes a free agent in 3 years' time? So they're trying to, I think, Stephen, to transition their roster into a more nimble fashion, a more nimble arrangement from a payroll standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But in the near term, what they're now left with, Stephen, is a lineup that does not really have, in my opinion, that one player, which the Yankees have had for a long time, who you can say, you know what, that guy is an elite hitter who can carry our lineup for 6 weeks or at least a month.
Yep.
They don't have that player.
No, they're all, it's all past tense.
Exactly.
You know, they've got guys who were that. Yeah.
Exactly. And who knows? Maybe A-Rod has another great year, Steven, but I have to think he's going to have a hard time replicating what he did this past year. Teixeira coming off of an injury as well. And their rotation, I believe the number was 170. They had zero pitchers exceed 170 innings last year, which is just unfathomable to find a way to make that into the postseason with a rotation that way. And, of course, Tanaka, he had the elbow surgery, a cleanup after the season was over. Sabathia coming back, obviously, is now publicly known about with alcoholism. So there's a lot going on there with that Yankee rotation, guys, where I think this is what, to me, the AL East, and I've been high on the Rays here lately. The Rays, I think, might be as tough of a team for the Jays to have to deal with in the entire league, in the entire division, rather, just because of how good their rotation is. I think the Rays are going to get better offensively as well. The Rays are a team I think they're going to find a way to get in the playoffs, whether it's wild card division title, not sure, but the Rays, I think, are a far more dangerous team than the Red Sox or the Yankees for the Jays to have to deal with this year.
Of course, we also do have to mention that it is 2016. It's an even number year, so everything we've talked about is irrelevant because the Giants are going to win.
That's very true.
But that's okay. So a note of skepticism there about the mighty Red Sox and David Price.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
Address that, JP.
Yeah, no, well, I think that, listen, the Red Sox, for me, there are still questions in their outfield, and also with Hanley at first base, and their overall continuity. I think the Red Sox, to me, they proceeded with their moves. Dave Dombrowski, now in his first offseason as the Red Sox GM, basically saying, we think that this whole thing can be fixed with two pitchers. Basically, David Price, Craig Kimbrell. Those were the two big-ticket moves they made. Yes, they brought in Chris Young as a platoon outfielder, but they're basically saying to everybody, we think Pedroia's going to come back healthy, that Big Poppy's going to hit and be a good DH in his final year. Of course, he's retiring after the season's over. That Jackie Bradley Jr. was for real, that Ruzny Castillo's an everyday outfielder. And again, Hanley and Pablo, they're going to bounce back after very disappointing first seasons in Boston. I really think, guys, Hanley, I'm skeptical, okay? I mean, he's got to switch positions now for the second straight year. He's a guy that in the past, when things have not gone his way, he has moped, and we'll see if that happens again. So there's a lot of eyes now, a lot of pressure there. Yes, it's a new GM, and from that standpoint, a new regime. But I don't know yet, guys, if I can trust Hanley's going to be the guy he's been in the past, or if this is a new era for Hanley, if he's really going to totally adopt the first base and play very well, because Travis Shaw, who played first base in the second half last year, was pretty good. And so that's a real toxic situation where you have a guy that came in, played very well, endeared himself to his teammates, and now Hanley comes back and, okay, now I'm switching positions and I'm going to be able to do this job when you had a very popular guy come in and do a good job for you in the second half. That is a very, very tricky situation to manage. I do think the pitching is going to be better, Steven, but how much better? You know, certainly David Price and Kimbrel are going to help a lot. But I don't know if the rest of that staff is up to par, and certainly I don't think it's as deep as what the Rays have. So that's why I'm a little skeptical about Boston. It really has to do with Hanley, the lineup, the health of it, the age of it, and then the pitching staff. I'm not sure if the really two pitchers are enough to transform the entire team.
John, we got to make way. We've got to make way. We're going to have DeMar DeRozan join us in a couple of minutes. But before we let you go, point number 7 on your 10 biggest storylines, I'm going to bring it close to home. Do the teams that ended substantial playoff droughts in 2015, those being the Jays, Astros, and Mets, have staying power as contenders? Who of those three teams do you see as having staying power?
I think the Astros certainly do. Mm-hmm. I think that their core is young. And I think the Jays, listen, they're going to contend this year. I have no question about it. I just, the one thing about Toronto that I'm concerned about from their standpoint is they don't have that deep prospect base from which to trade for this year's David Price because all those guys are now gone.
True, correct.
And they didn't really, I don't think, leverage the full ability of those postseason revenues and the situation into getting a far deeper and far more competitive rotation without David Price. I think that was my one concern, and it is going forward. If all of a sudden, if there's an injury to one of their core guys, and they were pretty healthy this past year for the most part, there's an injury to a key position player or a shortcoming in the rotation of the bullpen, do they have the prospects to trade at this point in time? That I'm worried about. And that's where I know Houston has the prospects. The Mets are in pretty good shape, too. But the currency of your prospects, I'm worried now about where the Jays stand in that as we enter a new season.
John, it was great to do this, as always. Thanks so much.
Sounds great. We'll be talking. I'll have more to say about the Wings next time around as well.
There you go. Oh, I know you will. Yeah, we can't wait. Take care, man. John Pomerosi. His 10 biggest storylines as we await spring training is up in Fox Sports right now. I'll just run through them very quickly. The Cubs are supposed to win the World Series. Did the Dodgers improve enough to win their first World Series since 1988? Are David Price and Craig Kimbrell truly the difference between fifth place and first for the Red Sox? The Yankees, newly austere, are trying to win with an aging core. The Royals could be in the verge of the dynasty. New, possibly contentious labor talks set to commence. Do the teams that have ended substantial playoff droughts in 2015, the Jays, Astros, and Mets, have staying power as contenders? Can Dusty Baker turn the Nationals into a harmonious winner? That may be one of the best storylines of the year. We also got to mention Giancarlo Stanton, Albert Pujols, and Michael Brantley are returning to action. They are key hitters returning to action this spring, and we already talked about the Diamondbacks stunning the industry with sweeping off-season moves. However, as I said, it's an even-numbered year. That means the Giants win the World Series. That's the way it goes. DeMar DeRozan joins us. It's the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
My guess is this next guest is going to be just about the busiest man in Toronto this weekend. The NBA All-Star Weekend is upon us. The events begin officially on Friday, but people are already coming into town. Certainly, the talk is all about the All-Star Game in Toronto. DeMar DeRozan is one of the two Toronto Raptors in the All-Star Game, along, of course, with Kyle Lowry. DeMar DeRozan joins us on the Jeff Blair Show, along with Stephen Brunt. DeMar, thank you so much for doing this.
No problem.
We talked to Leo Routens at the start of the show about All-Star Weekend, and I asked the question of Leo. I said, what do you think Dwayne Casey said or will say to DeMar and Kyle? Because it's going to be a great weekend, but you guys play so many minutes. I've got to think at some point, Dwayne said to you, DeMar, whatever you guys do, have fun, enjoy it, but try to get some sleep. Did he tell you guys that?
For sure he told us that, without a doubt. He let that be known.
So he said that.
Go ahead.
But are you going to get some sleep? You're a host here, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to try my best, though. I think me and Kyle definitely going to try our best. But, you know, he also told us to go out here and enjoy the weekend. You know, he understands, we're gonna try to get as much rest as possible. But he also let us know, you know, just go have fun.
How are you approaching this, DeMar, as Steven said? I mean, you're the host in some ways. You and Kyle are, and I know that NBA players come to Toronto and they play here, but this is your city. This is, you know, you're the city's guys. How are you going to go about approaching that when you're talking to other NBA stars?
Just go out there and just let them know that the city is a great city. You know, it's a lot to do here. You know, whatever we can do to help to try and make it as enjoyable stay as possible. You know, we're here for that.
Is cold weather going to be an impediment? Because it's going to be cold this weekend.
I don't think so. You know, I think everybody understood coming up it was going to be a little chilly, so it shouldn't be surprising to anybody.
What's the best thing about being an All-Star? And I was going to ask you being an All-Star in your own city, but clearly you have to wait to say it. But what's the best thing about being an All-Star? What does it mean to an athlete to be called an All-Star?
It's definitely an honor. You know, a lot of people don't get the opportunity to be one, especially multiple ones. And, you know, just being in a pool of guys who dominate in this league, you know, that's definitely big. It, you separate yourself.
The game is, this is showtime by definition, DeMar, but how do you approach the game itself?
The All-Star game?
Yes.
You know, go out there, first of all, represent the organization the best way we could. Go out there, have fun, and, you know, compete. Put on a great, great game for the fans and the world to see.
DeMar, of course, you were very open in your comments after the loss to Minnesota about it wasn't the way you wanted the first half or the pre-All-Star break portion of the schedule, I should say, to end. You know, obviously a lot of people are going to look at that and go, well, it's kind of understandable because with the All-Star game coming, guys' minds may have been elsewhere. How much chatter has there been amongst your teammates or maybe even opposing players about the All-Star game? You know, when you're on the court, if guys said to you, hey, you know, man, we'll be seeing you in Toronto. And just how much conversation has there been about this?
I mean, it's been messy. You know, can't not happen, but to be mentioned. You know, but you kind of don't get too caught up in it. You know, it's gonna come when it's gonna come, and you know, we all understand we got a job that we have to take care of before we get there. You know, now the break is here, now we can enjoy it. You know, it sucks that we have to, you know, come off a loss with it, but you know, it's a learning experience. Use this break to get some rest and get right back to it.
I would assume normally, in normal circumstances, DeMar, if guys who are not playing in the game take the weekend to go visit family, do stuff like that. But your teammates, you know, again, because this is here and it's home, is kind of everybody part of it? Everybody kind of part of the weekend, at least, your teammates and the Raptors?
Yeah, everybody definitely a part of it. I think most of the guys are going to try to stay up for the weekend, then try to enjoy that back end of the break. Because, you know, it's one in a lifetime, you know, to have an All-Star game here. And I think guys just want to be a part of it, enjoy it, you know, and, you know, we want to embrace all our teammates to come enjoy it with me and Kyle.
Are you much of a collector? Are you much of a memorabilia guy?
Outside of shoes, not really.
Okay, I was going to ask you, anybody you want to get something signed from or anybody, you know, I'm thinking in particular of Kobe because I know how much Kobe means to you and I know how much he meant growing up. Is there anybody you're kind of, I mean, you want to get something from at this game?
I don't know. It may start something this weekend, honestly, that now that you say that, just to start something like that, because, you know, that's a memory that, you know, 15, 20 years from now, you can look back on and you know, have that memory of, you know, but Kobe, definitely one of them, you know, to go out the way he's going and as one of the greatest players of all time. So, you know, I definitely might start some.
How cool.
If I get his jersey or something.
Oh, I was going to say, how cool will that be for you that you're going to be playing in Kobe's last All-Star game as an opponent, but you're going to be out there?
Man, I thought about it, but, you know, I think it's going to be a whole different story when that ball gets thrown up and we out there together and, you know, laughing and joking. And, you know, you really realize this is last one and, you know, I'm a part of it. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it.
DeMar, we know that you've got a hectic schedule these next couple of days. We're going to let you run. Thanks for doing this, and thank Jim for us for setting it up, man.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Take care. It's DeMar DeRozan of the Toronto Raptors. And obviously as an L.A. guy, Kobe's his guy. That's I just think, mm-hmm. You know, you try to imagine what it would be like to be on the court or on the field or on the rink with your guy you grew up idolizing. I think, I don't care how much money you make, I don't care how many All-Star appearances you made, how many championships, that's kind of got to be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think the little kid in people comes out, you know, mm-hmm. that does come out in these kind of circumstances.
And the great thing about the NBA All-Star game, I guarantee you, second half is all going to be about getting Kobe. Well, I was going to say it's going to be about getting Kobe his shots, but that probably won't matter because Kobe takes the shots. It's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, for my money, the two All-Star games I pay any attention to is the Major League Baseball All-Star game for obvious reasons. But in terms of a show, nothing beats the NBA All-Star game.
You know, and it's going to. As I was stuck in traffic coming in today, I believe I saw there must be assembling all the Escalades and Hummers in Ontario because there were a ton of them.
Oh yeah,
I just, you know, it was quite something to see the, you know, say, man. It's not the usual. This is not the usual Gardner Expressway traffic jam.
There's no, it's
great big things around me here.
Great big things, and well, at least when I was driving, and a couple of them were moving unusually fast. But I think it's going to be a great. I think it's going to be a great weekend in this city. And like I said, this is a sport. This is an All-Star game that becomes, it's a cultural event. Major League Baseball, yeah, it tends to take over the city, but it's not the same. There's not the same vibe to it. The All-Star game, Major League Baseball's All-Star game is homey wherever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's
true. The NBA All-Star game is sizzle. It's, you know, it's showbiz. And in a lot of ways, basketball is helped by the fact that you can play a basketball all-star game at about 90% what you would normally play a basketball game, and it comes off. I mean, you can't play have the hockey all-star game and play at 90%. You'd have guys falling down and getting hurt. So,
and just wait, we got a few minutes left here. I just want to, when we left Mr. Morosi,
yes,
going 100 miles an hour, as yes, he often is, he mentioned, we had a little talk about the Blue Jays there, and about yep, theirs, and he talked about a predicament that, you know, when we talk about the Jays and kind of their lineup and the rotation and the bullpen and all of the things we've talked about, I think he actually hit on something that is, you know, really the biggest, the kind of fundamental challenge for this, that organization when we talk about this year. You know, they're going to score. Their starting nine is going to be very, very good. Mm-hmm. They're going to score a ton of runs. The back end of their bullpen, I think, is going to be fine. And I think their pitching rotation, while not flashy, will be adequate. So they look like a contending team when you look at 25 guys.
Mm-hmm.
When you get beyond 25 guys, which is something that tends to happen at some point during a season, people do get hurt.
Yeah.
When you start looking at kind of, you know, organizational depth, they've got some issues. And in terms of prospect capital, which, you know, is a big thing, right? It's mm-hmm, not just the fact that you're not going to have anybody push anyone for a major league job this year, because I don't think there's one player you're going to have in that organization. But the lack of prospect capital that Mark Shapiro has been left with to operate in 2016 on a team that is contending, where you do need some flex, you know, you might have to make a move. That is, you know, that's the biggest challenge for him right now. It's not that he's got a $140 million payroll or whatever it is. Not that they couldn't retain David Price, not that they ever were. What's going to happen in July if this team is right in it?
Yeah.
And you need to make a move. How do you make that move?
You know, it's why when we talked a little bit yesterday, and I spoke to somebody in the organization who'd heard what we said, you know, and I kind of threw out the idea that at some point in the next 2 years, you almost have to make a deal where you bring in prospect capital. You almost have to. It's great you can go out and draft successfully and all that good stuff, but if you look at the way this organization is positioned, you almost have to make that deal. And the key is, how do you do it without necessarily having to rebuild?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the guy in the organization said, you're right. I mean, it's not something that we've talked about right now, but yeah, there's not a lot of there's some good players in the minor leagues. But there's really nobody right now that people are saying this guy's guaranteed. I mean, Anthony Alford could be.
Closest thing to it, probably, yeah, in terms of position players.
But who knows?
But really, yeah, who knows?
And Sean Reed Foley, a pitcher. Harris, I think a lot of people really, really like. Yep. John Harris is
first-round pick.
Someone told me he's the type of guy who could, by the end of this year, be ready next year for the major.
But really, what you're talking about is guys. So, you know, and again, every other organization knows exactly what they have.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've talked about that. The new guys may not be as wedded to those prospects mm-hmm, as the guys who drafted them or signed them are. That's natural. They may not feel the same way. But if you don't have an abundance of those kind of guys, this team could get caught in kind of a betwixt and between situation because of the payroll they're already committed to in 2017.
Just a couple of items of breaking news. Nazem Kadri has been fined $5,000 by the National Hockey League for his throat / gesture against the Calgary Flames. And LeSean McCoy, the Buffalo Bills,
charged,
according to WPVI in Philadelphia, an arrest warrant is coming soon for LeSean McCoy.
Buffalo, you are a cursed town.
They make you want to shout.
I feel for the folks in Buffalo. Every time you kind of relax a little bit and say, we didn't make the playoffs this year, but there's some good pieces here, and they're going to try and keep things together, essentially, and let's go forward. And then that happens, and that's a messy one. I don't know if you've seen the video. But
yes, I have seen the video.
Doesn't look good for Shady there.
No. And there you go. And the NFL offseason has started when the players start getting served with arrest warrants. That's really I need to change my tune.
You do
about
need
that.
To change your tune.
But it is true. But I don't want to have that discussion. I want to go back to baseball and deal with Morosi's 10 points as well. One thing we haven't talked about, and you know what, Brent? Get used to it, because we're probably going to have to start talking about it sometime, or these labor talks. And I actually, if we'd had a few more minutes with John, I would have touched on it. I'm getting the sense from talking to people that I don't think there'll be a stoppage, but I'm getting a sense that this may be the most contentious round of labor negotiations we've seen since that, I want to say it was three contracts ago, where we think we came within an hour or so of having some sort of stoppage. Remember, the Red Sox were in Fenway Park in the clubhouse. You know, there's a and I guess one of the problems is a lot of the issues are kind of, they're not sexy, but they're issues that cost people money.
Yeah.
And they're issues that get to how the system works, not the least of which is, you know, and John uses the words, and I think it's right, the overall inefficiency of the free agent market, you know, is evidenced by the large number of unsigned players so close to spring training. I mean, you know that the Players Association is looking at that and saying, we've got to change this. And the owners are looking at it and going, that system works fine for us.
Yeah. I don't think there's a strike or a lockout issue there. And, I don't think we'll ever see a player strike in any sport again, because I don't think owners will ever let it go to that stage. They'll lock out before they ever strike, because they want to do it on their terms and their timing.
Yeah, I just don't know about the NBA thing. The NBA is,
but generally what we've seen since the baseball strike of 94, 95 was that owners and sports said, we're going to do, you know, we don't want anybody striking right before our postseason or in the middle of a season when our big revenue stretch comes. We're going to lock them out before the season starts, when they're hurting for money, but, you know, when they're before their cash flow starts, and we'll turn the screws on our timetable. But, you know, if you look at the work stoppages we've had in professional sport, have all focused on kind of somebody trying to either force or prevent systemic changes, right?
Salary cap.
Impose a salary cap, or, you know, something, it's got to be something big, like, you know, guaranteed contracts or salary cap, something where, you know, you need a rallying point on both sides. You know, you need owners to be able to say, this is worth it. It's worth us turning off the tap, because if we win, we're going to get something that's going to be so good for us that it's going to mitigate the damage we're about to do. On a player standpoint, you need guys to be able to say, you know, we're going to give up precious playing time in careers that are short and give up money. Mm-hmm. But we're either fighting on a huge point of principle, happens occasionally, or we're fighting again for something that, you know, is going to so badly affect our lives and the way, you know, and our incomes that it's absolutely worth it to pound the pavement. I don't see that, you know, and there's a ton of money in the system in baseball.
Yes.
No one is trying to impose a cap system. I think, you know, you've got different leadership on the players' side now. That's going to be interesting. They may want to rattle swords a little bit just to show they're still awake.
You've got different ownership.
You do
in some issues,
in some
different
places.
Ownerships at the table, different ownership, I should say, at the table.
Yeah.
You know, someone pointed out to me that, said, I don't, his point was, he said, I don't know how contentious these negotiations will necessarily be, but he said they'll be longer and more complicated than the past couple negotiations, which were concluded. God, the one was concluded. Nobody even knew they were talking.
Yeah.
And, you know, he just got a press release after the World Series that Major League Baseball and the Players Association have come to agreement on a new CBA. And this person's point was that it could be not necessarily contentious, but that he said the lawyers are going to have to do a lot of rewriting and a lot of real hard legal work. They're going to be struggling with definitions and a lot of issues.
But, you know, we've entered a different phase in that whole kind of sports labor universe, right? And I reread Marvin Miller's book a little while ago.
Right.
When you go back through that book and understand where that union started, which was nowhere, and then the battles they fought and the battles won and the consistency. And they were on fundamental points of principle and had to get baseball players to understand that those things were worth fighting for. And they did. And look, you know what? It paid off. They all got way richer than they used to be. And they had freedom of movement and they had all kinds of things that they didn't have before that. They weren't indentured servants the way, you know, well-paid indentured servants the way they had been in the past. That's, you know, but that's history. And I think, you know, if you kind of look at where we are in terms of the sports that have caps will always have caps.
Yeah, it's not changing.
Baseball's not ever going to have a cap.
It doesn't need one.
No, and they found a way. The baseball economy is different, right? It's very regional, local. There's a lot of cash in the system right now. And they have found ways to kind of divide that cap up. The players are going to be, you know, probably frustrated about some of the drags on free agency, the drags on movement, drags on the marketplace that are artificial.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they can win a little bit on that front. But, you know, really, it is a system that has worked pretty darn well for the players and worked pretty darn well for the owners over the last 20 plus years.
One of the keys has been, too, and we've seen this in the NHL, and we'll see it with the World Cup of Hockey, I know I get accused of being pro Donald Fehr a lot, but we've seen in baseball and hockey things evolve to the point where the Players Association and owners are actually business partners in ventures sort of outside of the NHL, the World Cup of Hockey. That's a partnership. That's a legal business partnership. The World Baseball Classic, same thing, legal business partnership. And that's something, I mean, I can remember, you know, covering disputes. I never thought I'd see, I mean, two sides always talked about we're partners, and you'd always go, yeah, you're partners, but you hate each other. But here they're actually legitimate partnerships where we both make money if we both do this right. We both take a bath if we both do this wrong.
Yeah.
And that creates a common dialogue.
Well, it does. Those joint ventures, you know, the World Baseball Classic, the international stuff, building the business beyond its traditional borders.
Steroids help too, because as we've often talked about, you had common cause all of a sudden.
You did, and again, that erased some of the enmity from collusion, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like people kind of forget that whole collusion thing and how that poisoned the water forever and how long, you know, that poisoned. There was no chance for any trust post collusion.
No, and understandably,
they cheated them. They cheated the players and lied. So, you know, it took a long time for that to disappear. I'm with you. I give Donald Fehr a lot of credit for building a new kind of relationship. And, you know, he could obviously fight the fight when he had to as well. He could be that guy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he is a, you know, visionary is a word you kick around in a little too often, I think. But, you know, I think in terms of sports business, Don Fehr is a visionary. He is a guy that has looked forward and seen things that I don't think other people necessarily saw.
Yeah. He's always had the ability to see the kernel of agreement in the middle of all the nonsense. So that's it for us today. Again, we'll have a full slate of NBA All-Star activities all weekend long starting Friday. Tim and Sid will be live from NBA Center Court. Roger Lajoie will be down there with Sportsnet tonight. We'll have the NBA All-Star Celebrity Game on Sportsnet 1. Brent is not playing in that. The BBVA Compass NBA Rising Stars Challenge, 9 p.m. on Sportsnet 1. Saturday will be a lot of fun. The State Farm All-Star Saturday Night Taco Bell Skills Challenge. Brent won't be in that.
Nope.
Foot Locker 3-point contest. I'm already saying Klay Thompson's going to win it. Verizon Slam Dunk. Andre Drummond's going to win it. Sunday, the All-Star Game goes at 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 590. The Fan of Sportsnet 1. Ben Ennis and Roger Lajoie and Dan Riccio on the scene Sunday from NBA Center Court. Ben Ennis and Roger Lajoie on the scene Saturday from NBA Center Court. So we will be broadcasting live from there. As always, Sportsnet.ca will be your go-to source for written and video material out of the All-Star Game, and I think I've plugged everybody I have to plug.
Well done.
Oh, Leafs and Oilers tonight on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Jeez, I can't do that. Leafs Nation pregame with Stelic and Hlushko at 8:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Puck drop just after 9 p.m. on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Connor McDavid against the Leafs. That ought to be a lot of fun. For Stephen Brent and a cast of millions, I'm Jeff Blair saying thanks for joining us on The Jeff Blair Show. Have a great day.